Hello, and welcome to the OTP, the one true podcast for fanfiction readers, writers, and lovers. I'm your host and mod, Enthusiasm Girl. Now, in today's episode, I'm joined by contributors Renee Sylvester-Williams and Sunny Hope, and we're going to be discussing the ins and outs of beta reading. For those of you who are new to fanfiction, a beta reader is someone who is engaged by a writer to review, edit, and assist with polishing their work prior to posting or publishing it. In many ways, a beta reader fills the same function as an editor would in the world of pro fiction. Some betas may only be requested to check grammar, spelling, and punctuation. Others might be requested to rewrite a fic with the author from the ground up and give advice on plot, continuity, and characterization. It's really up to the writer in the beta to decide. Now, beta reading is a practice almost as old as fanfiction itself. As long as there have been fanfiction writers, there have been people willing to beta, and the question of whether or not betas are necessary in fanfiction is one that's been the subject of some contentious debate over the years within fandom. As bad fic has proliferated, many people have argued that beta readers are crucial. Some people may even refuse to read unbeta fic, and you'll generally see writers indicate in their notes if they used a beta or not. To beta or not to beta is one of the questions I posed to Renee and Sunny, among others, and their experience and insights are really interesting. As someone who personally never really engaged a beta reader, the conversation you're about to hear actually taught me a lot that I didn't know and gave me a new perspective, and I hope you'll feel the same way. So, let's start the episode. The topic today is going to be beta reading, and I have with me Renee Sylvester-Williams. So Renee, introduce yourself a little bit.
Hi, I'm Renee. I am actually a writer and editor by trade, so while I don't write fanfic, I have beta read for X-Files fanfic, Stargate a lot, and I will occasionally pop into Sherlock and Star Trek and maybe comment and offer editorial comments. I don't beta read as much anymore for various reasons, of which will probably come up in this podcast. Nice to meet everyone.
All right. Thank you very much, Renee. And we also have Sunny Hope. So Sunny, do you want to talk a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm Sunny. I'm not writing fanfic as much. I'm still reading it a lot. But when I was writing, I had some amazing betas, and then I was able to turn around and do the same favor for other people. The fandoms I've written and started with Buffy, went to Angel, did some Firefly. Apparently I like Joss Whedon. Stargate, Atlantis, The Sentinel, a couple of Merlin fics. So I had fingers in a lot of pots.
Okay. So I'm going to get right to it and we'll just kind of dive into the topic. Maybe if both of you want to define, you know, however you define it, what a beta reader is. So we'll start with you, Sunny.
That's one of the main tricks in having a good writer-beta reader relationship, is finding out what both parties thought they were getting into. A beta reader can be as easy as making sure the commas are in the right spot and that you've spelt the characters' names correctly. It can be as in-depth as going, well, this emotional arc doesn't go, or the way you've done this characterization doesn't jive with how you're ending it here. So all the way from deep substantive issues to Sanders, not with a Z, but with an X. And you have to decide between the two of you what the writer is looking for. Otherwise, both sides will get pissed off.
Okay, so it's kind of up to a beta reader to define for themselves or with the person who they're reading for what that role is.
Yeah, and it's best to find out what the writer wants, find out what the writer is willing to accept. And that's something I think we can discuss.
Renee, how would you define what a beta reader is?
I find that very difficult because, you know, I've taken editing courses, I have edited professionally. So for me, I like to think of beta reading almost like editing, whether it is something as quick as a proofread for spelling and grammar, or something more substantive where you have to take sort of the big picture and see how everything fits in it. But I do agree with Sunny because you can't just say, I'll be your beta reader and then just start editing or betaing, as the case might be. So when I've done it, I've offered and then I'll go, listen, what do you expect out of this? Do you want me to just check for spelling and grammar, BritPick, Canadian English, American English, or do you want me to look at sort of the entire story and look at characterization, look at plot, you know, make sure nobody has three legs and five arms unless they're supposed to have three legs and five arms, you know, that sort of thing. So it's almost like creating what they'd call a statement of work, what you expect, what they want to get out of it, and all that, because if you don't do that, there could be tears. I'm assuming there's tears. I never know. It's all through the internet.
Yeah.
Okay.
So from your perspective, being an editor kind of IRL, right, in real life, Renee, mm-hmm. Is there a substantive difference between what you would offer as a beta reader versus an editor? Because I know sometimes people assume they're the same thing and some people would debate that they're not.
Ah, God, that's a tough one. I like to treat it almost as the same thing because, quite frankly, that's how I edit. And, you know, if I'm going to read a piece of fan fiction that will have my name on it as a beta reader, I want it to be the best possible piece of fanfic out there in the fandom. But that being said, it all really depends on what the writer wants. If the writer's like, no, I'm good with it, I just need spelling and grammar because I want to put it up because I've got to get it done for end of November, then okay, great. Or it's a Christmas story and, you know, you're asking for a beta reader on the 18th of December, then fine. But I like to treat it as the same thing.
So why do both of you think that beta readers kind of are necessary in the world of fan fiction? So we'll go back to Sunny. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that they're so necessary?
It's not more necessary in the world of fan fiction than it is for any other written communication. What you as a writer come up with and what you as a writer put on a page may not be what the page is telling another party. Because you know what you meant. And it's good to have a second pair of eyes go, but is this set in Toronto? Or like, there's no city, I don't know if it's on this planet. Things that you know are part of the story may not have made the page. Uh-huh. So it's always good, whether it's a business letter or whether it's an epic 50,000 word fanfic or even a drabble if you can, have another pair of eyes look at it and go, you forgot to put any character names in here. It also depends on what the goal of writing is. If the goal of writing is for you to express yourself, just you and getting your feelings out, then that type of writing doesn't need an editor. If you want anyone else to read it, it does. So that's okay. Sort of my thoughts on why editing and beta-ing is important in anything. A friend was just mentioning that she's seen posters for events where they didn't put the time or date because the people mm-hmm. running the event knew.
Yep.
Okay. And Renee, what do you think about that? Why do you think that they're so necessary?
Oh my God, I don't know where to start. Okay, so I write for a living. I can't read my own work. And I can't edit my own work. That's what it comes down to. Because what I read on the computer or in my notepad, I know I'm looking at it. But unless I'm reading it out loud, what I am looking at is not necessarily the words on the screen or on the notepad. It's what's in my head. Because the story's in my head. And I think most of us are the same way. You know, what you're reading is a story in your head. And then, you know, quite frankly, there are just some fanfics where, you know, they've just sort of spattered the words out and have done no research.
There's a story in the NCIS fandom, which was written by an Australian, which mm-hmm. is very clear because at one point they're sailing up the East Coast outside of New York. They land on an island and they stop and get something from a coconut tree. It's very well written in all other respects. She just kind of forgot that North America's geography and plant life were vastly different.
Exactly. I once read a CSI fic, years ago, and character one and character two, they were in love and they were supposedly in a monogamous relationship. Character one cheats on character two, picks up an STD, gives it to character two. Fine. The problem is, character two gets super traumatized by this and kills himself. And character one is so guilty about this, about giving character two an STD that made him kill himself, that he kills himself. But the problem is, the STD was chlamydia.
So they really had a deathly fear of antibiotics.
Yes. And I didn't beta read this, obviously, because, you know, I took health class and biology. and I can Google. And this is on the days of LiveJournal, and I'm dating myself here. And usually I don't comment on people's fics that way, but I'm just reading. I kind of wanted to hit the back button, but I couldn't because I had to see how this thing ended. So at the end of it, I commented. I'm like, listen, you know, no grammatical mistakes, no spelling mistakes, but you know, there's a cream for that, right? Which isn't the nicest way to do it, but I can't find myself to regret that. And then, of course, the comments went insane.
Yeah.
And, you know, the author kind of eventually took down her story. And for a moment, I felt really bad. But then I'm like, no, there are going to be people who will find that story and think chlamydia is incurable. I mean, it's antibiotic resistant now, but it's, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's interesting that you point that out, because I would think that for certain people, they may assume that they know about something.
Mm-hmm.
And they may just not realize the scope of what they don't know, especially if they're a younger writer, right? Or if they're not in the country. Because like you said, I mean, story written in Australia, the person genuinely probably just didn't know. And you do see a lot, and this is something I see and I encounter all the time in fic, of people who just didn't Brit pick or kind of America pick their stories. So if you're writing about Harry Potter, there are betas now who specialize for people in just kind of Brit picking over the story and saying, listen, if you're writing in the Harry Potter fandom, is the elevator called a lift? You know,
mm-hmm.
Are you using the British terms? And it goes both ways, because I know for me in the Avengers fandom, there are so many Avengers fans who I will encounter enormous British things in the middle of the story. And I'll just think, you know, no, Tony Stark's not going to call it a lift, right? Or, you know, they're not going to refer to it as second year. They'll call it second grade.
And there's no way that the Winchesters take anything out of the boot unless it's a sock.
Exactly, exactly. Right. Or in the new Star Trek reboot fandom that has Spock losing his shit like every other chapter. I mean, yeah. Okay, granted, that's not the best example, because apparently Spock loses his shit every movie, but whatever.
Do you think, though, that there are some writers who kind of care more or less about that stuff, who would argue that it's not always necessary and it's just fan fiction?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
There's sort of two main groups of writers in fanfic. Those are doing it because they've got a nifty story idea and they want people to pile on and tell them how the one true pairing is awesome and clearly they're the best thing ever. And people who are trying to craft a solid story.
Mm-hmm.
For the first group, if they get the names right and they've got any sort of plot and they end up with a kissing scene, they're happy. They may ask for a beta to, because they might know they have to check the spelling and stuff, but they don't want, their goal is not to become better writers. Their goal is to tell the story in their brain. The other group is more craft oriented, and they want to be told that they're abusing commas and semicolons, that they're that, and their witches are switched around, that they go into deep research puddles and pools and rabbit holes and discover that they really can't use any of that in the actual story, but try anyway. And those are the ones which are more, it feels better betaing for them, because you know it's a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to jump in there, I mean, I agree 100%. And I'll tell you something. I mean, you see those memes where they say writing is hard? I mean, writing is hard. You know, I can't tell you how often I've looked at a clean Word document and I have a deadline and, you know, I'm not going to ask my editor for an extension. And I'm like, I don't know where to start. So sometimes you just start in the middle. And then eventually, you know, you look at it, you write it, you look at it and you're like, wow, that's terrible. And you rewrite it. But there's two things I want to bring up. One, there's the argument that fic writers do it for free. Therefore, you shouldn't be that critical of what you get. And then the second one, which I think has become more and more popular, is publishing houses are mining fanfic for publication. So, you know, again, and just sort of building on Sunny's comment, there are these two disparate groups of fanfic writers. Is that going to change? No, probably not. But ever since the whole 50 Shades of Grey thing, I have seen fic writers who have said, listen, I have to take this fic down, because it's going, you know, I'm rewriting it for publication, that sort of thing. And, you know, fic has become a viable way to be a published author in the sense that a publishing house picks you up. So I think betaing has become more important if that is a goal.
To be fair, editing has become more important. Well, has always been important if you're going to submit anything to a publishing house.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, a lot of publishing houses close their submissions for December 1st because nano writers write their 50,000 words and then send the file off without looking at it. And that's a great way to make sure you never get your stuff read ever.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with the people who come up with an idea and throw it up there and say, and just want to squee. You just get to know who those writers are, and you know if that's not the type of fic you want, you don't read it.
Exactly.
Do you think that there are a lot of the readers who will kind of say, oh, this is unbated, I'm taking a pass? Like, do you think that it's obvious when you're reading something unbated? Do you think that that's the majority of readers are saying it's unbated, I don't want to read it? Or do you think that, again, it falls into different camps?
I think it's different camps. And I think it's how long you've been reading fanfic. If you're just starting to read fanfic, you will, and you have a one true pairing in whatever fandom you're in, you want to read all the stories about those people that you can find. And you will read all of them. And then you get to find out that some of them are better than others, and some of them are longer, and some of them are actually characters you recognize when you read, instead of clearly someone's having a gripe with their boyfriend or something and they're just using fanfic to write it up, or they're killing their teacher. Whatever. And there's nothing wrong with hitting the back button.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing is everybody has an interpretation of the show or the movie or the book or even the podcasts, right? And they take that interpretation and put it down on paper. And with having so many people writing so much fic and just having this massive archive of fic for decades, and some fandoms are decades old, you are going to find fic that speaks to your visualization of the characters, how you interpret them. And then you find some characterization, you're like, what were you smoking when you wrote this? I mean, really? I don't see this at all. But I mean, there's no point in putting that in the comments because, again, it's all subjective.
Do you think that there's anything wrong with a writer who maybe puts a draft out and then puts a second draft up, or rather than have a beta reader is kind of looking for that concrete, so that constructive criticism in the comments, so they might put it up immediately and then go back and do a rewrite? Do you think that there's any issue with that style of approaching it?
I think you need a tough skin if you're going to do that. Okay, I see nothing wrong with it, but if you are going to put up any piece of writing, you have to be prepared for the anonymity of the internet and the anonymity of fans in fandoms to come down on you and pull it apart. It can happen. But if you can handle that and sift out the constructive criticism from it's terrible, take it down, I think it's actually a useful exercise.
And it's what some people might do to try and find a pool of betas.
Mm-hmm.
Because at least they're showing a willingness to make edits. Which some of that first group I talked about, who just had a great idea, which they need to throw up on the internet, literally, don't have that fortitude or even intention of ever trying to make it better. So it might be more a cry for help fic, I think those ones are.
Okay.
Hi, I know this isn't good enough. I don't know how to make it good enough. I need someone to help me make it good enough. Anyone want a beta? And you have to make that clear, though. If you don't say that, then all bets are off and you're going to get trampled.
Yeah.
So I will go out on a limb here and put myself out there and say that I tend to post unbated.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I don't want it to be good, but because any kind of typos or things that get pointed out to me, I correct, and I'm not as interested in waiting. I want the immediate feedback. That's kind of my thing, and I want to build the relationship with the readers who come back, right? But do you think, as some people I know do, that if you don't have a beta, that there's an element of arrogance maybe there? Or do you think that it's fine either way and there's really no way to judge that? Because I know some people take that attitude that, oh, it's very arrogant to put it out there unbated if you think it's good.
God, no.
I think arrogance is the term I would use.
No.
I would think that when I first started writing fanfic, what I was doing was writing drabbles. And I was in a community in LiveJournal, because yes, I am old, that would have a challenge on Sunday night. They'd give you the prompt and then you'd write a bunch of drabbles and people would be waiting basically for you to read them, so you would get comments back minutes later. And there is nothing like the rush of putting something up there and getting people telling you how awesome you are. And that's something, one of the benefits of fanfic is the quick feedback that published authors do not get ever. Because the immediacy of it.
Absolutely.
But if you're doing a long form story where you know it's going to be several chapters. And if you can find a pool of betas who work with you and work on your schedule, then there are times when I see unbetaed and I go and I see if the first paragraph's readable. And if it's not, then I just go back and don't worry about it and don't, quote, waste my time. But if it's solidly written and there's a typo or two, that doesn't put me off unless it's a lot of typos.
I still get a high seeing a byline, my byline on things. And we're talking more than a decade in the industry. I like seeing my name when it's been published. So I get the buzz of putting it up there and getting feedback. And, you know, there's nothing worse than, you know, like I submitted a couple pieces to a Canadian publication in July, and it's not coming out until November. And, you know, by now I'm kind of like, okay, all I can do is wait, but I want to see it. I want to see how it's going to be laid out. I want to show it to friends because I'm really, really proud of those pieces. It's something different than what I usually do. So I get the desire to like put your fic up there and get the immediate feedback and all that stuff. Caveat is don't be too sloppy with it. Because you're going to end up with the feedback you don't actually want. I mean, these days, there's so many spell checker and grammar checker programs that you can have a solid, mostly correctly spelt and grammatically correct story. And of course, you know, as I tell everybody, and I do this because I've had to do it more than once, read your story out loud. You know, those few things that you can do will save you from getting a lot of criticism if you are putting up a story that is unbated.
Okay.
And it doesn't take that long, because I know what it's like to wait to hear back from your editor. It's a pain.
But it's also whether you want to put this story out or you want to put the best version of this story out.
Yes.
Right.
And that's a choice as a writer you have to make. And that's also something else we should probably talk about. As a writer, you get feedback from betas. You don't have to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's your choice. They're pointing out something, and you can decide, no, in this case, my Xander would do that. I don't care what they think of what their Xander does. In this case, Xander would sit down and eat chocolate pudding because they've just had a battle. It's time for chocolate pudding. Or whatever you've done, if they point out going, well, wouldn't he wash his hands from the blood first? No, Icar and chocolate. It goes together great. Whatever. But you as a writer get to make that determination. And then you're putting out in something into the world where you... Editing's kind of like sandpapering. So your betas will tell you where their attention got caught in a bad way. And you can decide whether you need to sand off those edges or whether you think it's fine and put it out there.
Well, that's interesting because, I mean, my experience, I've done a little bit of betaing recently. And it's one of the first times that I've really ever offered myself as a beta. And that was something I struggled with because I think that people can get really hung up on the rules of writing and forget that the rules are kind of sometimes made to be broken if they're broken well. And so, for example, the writer who I was baiting for tends to have a very stream of consciousness style. And I love that about this writer. So lots of italics, lots of freeform run-on sentences with kind of hyphens in the middle, and very stream of consciousness. Sometimes you're confused about what's happening, but that's on purpose. That's a stylistic choice. And so when she asked me to beta, I had to send it back to her and say, listen, so for me, that's not how I write. So you'll see that I have, in certain cases, suggested changing the sentence structure to make something clearer, you know, merged what was three, you know, one long run-on sentence into two sentences, made these little corrections to take out some of the italics but leave others. And I had to kind of say to her, you know, if that's a stylistic choice that you've made that you want to stand behind, feel free, because that's not how I normally write. And I do love your stream of consciousness style. So it might not follow the rules of grammar, but it's definitely part of who you are stylistically. So I had to kind of give it to her with that grain of salt, right?
And that's a good grain of salt, because what you're then doing is making the writer conscious of what choices they're making. And then they can actually decide instead of, it was 2 a.m. and this is what came out.
Right.
I would disagree with both of you.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. When you are editing, the entire point of editing is to keep the writer's voice. right? Not your own, and not insert your own. You can make suggestions, but understand that the point of editing, and I'm not talking about substantive where you pull the plot apart and all that stuff, is to keep the writer's voice, because that's why his or her their fans come back to them. They like the voice, they like the characterization. Even if this person that you are betaing for does not write the same way you write, it's fine to say that up front. But the thing to keep in mind is keep their own voice. Don't rewrite it, even if you do it subconsciously into their voice. And secondly, if you make a point, if you make a suggestion, and you know, I feel like sometimes if a writer wants to keep something, they have to have an explanation for it, right? Because if the beta has picked up on that, you know, so a commenter is going to pick up on it. Now, it is up to the writer whether or not they want to respond to comments. I'm not a big fan of reading comments, but they have to sort of have an explanation as to why X, Y, and Z has remained X, Y, and Z. It might be a case of it works for them, this is how they see the character, this is the rationale. And maybe it's a case of they haven't really built out the rationale as to why Xander's eating chocolate with blood on his hands. Which I can see him sitting down in a corner doing that, to be honest.
Yeah, and as long as it suits that Xander at that point in time, and as long as the writer is clear that he still hasn't washed his hands, this is what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, again, it's letting the writer know what a second party sees in the words.
Mm-hmm.
Versus what they, like as Renee said, she has the story in her brain, she knows how it's going. Not all of the details may have made it to the page.
Exactly. Well,
and one thing that I want to point out, too, is again, I think there is a difference between somebody saying, you shouldn't write this way, this isn't good writing, and somebody saying, clearly you're making a stylistic choice here. Because there are people who write, you know, purposefully bad fic, right? There are people who write purposefully really stream of consciousness, kind of Ken Kesey style fic, and there are people who write, you know, really flowery prose, and there are people who write really terse and mostly just dialogue. And so I think you have to, like Renee, like you said, you have to have an understanding of the writer's voice and a willingness to admit that however you see it is not necessarily how the writer is even really wanting it to be received, right? You have to take that, I think, into account.
But would you beta for somebody whose style is that different to yours? I mean, I studied The Waves by Virginia Woolf in high school, and I hated that book because it was so stream of consciousness. So I tend to avoid any stream of consciousness fic as for reading or for betaing, because I just don't like the style. But yeah, I mean, would you beta for somebody whose style is that different to yours? Or do you see that as a challenge?
What do you think about that, Sunny?
It is a challenge. It would have to be, I'd have to like the writing style. Because like, if I threw Renee a stream of consciousness fic, she'd be fighting through trying to read it without stabbing someone. And therefore, she can't beta it properly because she's fighting the style to actually read it. And that's not fair to her, not fair to me, not fair to whatever comes out the other end. It is a relationship between the writer and beta. And there has to be trust, and there has to be respect on both sides. If you think someone's writing a piece of garbage, you can't beta for them, because you're going to be talking down to them. You're not going to be working with them. You're going to be telling them what's wrong. And that's not the point. The point is to help the fic be the best fic it can be at this time with this writer.
Yeah, I think the worst thing to do is to get frustrated with a writer that you see potential and then offer to beta for them, because that can just go terribly wrong.
So then we've been talking a little bit about building that relationship. How do you find a good beta reader? Fanfiction.net does have a beta reading community. Mm-hmm. It kind of depends on where you are, but if you're a person seeking out a beta, how do you do that?
I was lucky in that I met someone in real life as I was starting to write fic, and I was able to send her a couple of things and go, "Hi, is this incredibly stupid, or can I put this up on the internet and not be ashamed?" Which I think was the actual email. And so that was, she didn't do a full beta. She just gave me the confidence to go, no, these work. They were drabbles. They were 100 words. You can put them up on this group. I did it when I started with Yahoo groups and then moved on to LiveJournal. And LiveJournal had a community. And you could say, hi, I'm interested can anyone be a beta for me? And people would respond. Some betas worked out better than others.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you have to take someone for a test run, both from the beta's point of view and the writer's point of view, on a fic to see if you're compatible. And that's important. And not being compatible doesn't mean that either side's a horrible person, no matter what you think at the moment. It just means that you're not compatible for working in this type of project together.
Exactly. I don't think it has to be as stringent as sort of professional editing. And I'll tell you something, a good editor is worth money. But since we're not talking about sort of actual publishing, I would say the same thing. Now, for me, when I've betaed, I have betaed for mostly people that I know. I met somebody at Polaris, the convention that I used to volunteer at. And, you know, we both into Stargate fandom. I used to read it. She wrote it. And, you know, she asked, and she knew my professional background, so she asked me to take a look at it. And I was more than happy to, because I was, like, really deep into Stargate fandom. I was on, you know, chats and forums and all that stuff. And you know what? Her work was really solid. She just had a habit of a character's eyes would run all over the other person. And I'm like, no, this sounds like the eyes have left that person's head and is like taking a stroll. That was the only thing. So that's how I've done it. A couple times I've offered for authors that I read and I really liked, and they're like, listen, I need an emergency beta. I'm like, yeah, I can do it. You know, what are you looking for? And then I've done that, and that's worked out well. I don't beta that much anymore because it is a lot of work. It is a lot of work. Or if I do, it's for shorter pieces, just because it takes time. I mean, you know, the whole thing is like they'll send you 2,500 words, and sometimes it can take you an hour. Sometimes it takes you a little more. But, you know, I think it boils down to, you know, having that personal relationship first, because betaing for a complete stranger takes a lot of trust on both sides.
Do you think that there is value also in seeking out betas for specific things? Because it strikes me that each fandom community kind of has different needs. So, for example, I recently have been writing a lot in Daredevil fandom.
Mm-hmm.
And in that particular fandom, you have challenges as a beta that you do not face anywhere else. So the main character, for example, is blind. So you have to make sure when you're betaing that if the person is saying he saw, that you're catching those things. And you also have to have an eye for portrayals of disability. You know, and in that particular fandom as well, there have been people who have specifically come onto some of the forums and places that it's written, and they've offered their services as, I am a medical beta. So I am someone who works in medicine. I will specifically beta for people with an eye towards whether or not something is medically accurate, because the character's constantly getting injured. He's dating a nurse, right? So they specifically say, I'm just a medical beta. Don't send it to me for grammar, but I will look it over and I will add any factual information to it and tell you if it's medically accurate. Or someone else offered to answer questions about New York City. So I'm a geography beta. I'll come in, and if the portrayal of the city is something you're interested in getting right, I will specifically look at it for that. Do you think that there is some value in the different communities having betas who are very specific to maybe one or two things that tend to get written incorrectly a lot?
Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt. All I know about medicine is take 2 Advil and have a glass of water and go lie down. And chlamydia does not kill you, as far as I know. See? That's all I know about medicine. All right? So, anyway. No, absolutely. I mean, you know, sometimes it's good to have, I would say, not even beta readers, but just a community of people who have knowledge. I was reading a fic, and it was set in Vancouver. And again, one character spoke to the other character about a restaurant and asked if he found it on Yelp. And the other person was like, oh no, Canada doesn't have Yelp. And a commenter was like, we do have Yelp. And the author's like, I did not do the research properly. Thank you very much. When I opened Yelp, it was set to my default, which is New York City. So I logged out, and then there was Yelp.ca. And she went back in and edited the story, and everybody was happy.
Yeah, I love researching fic. I love my fic being as accurate as possible. And that's sort of a writer choice, but for the pool of people who are working on their craft. They don't want to stumble across things that make everyone laugh and take you out of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So having someone who can double check that you haven't crossed two avenues or you're not meeting at a corner of two avenues in New York City because they don't cross
mm-hmm.
is a great mm-hmm. thing. Being able to ask specific questions on medicine or that, as long as you know what you're getting from the beta, that's fabulous. And you can have someone else check the grammar, but you know you're solid on this. Again, that adds delays between writing and putting it up.
Mm-hmm.
But it might make you happier with the end product because you know it's solid.
And I just think these days with Tumblr and Google and Twitter accounts and all that stuff, having access to that kind of information almost leads to me thinking you really don't have that much of an excuse for some big errors. Small errors, absolutely, because I mean, again, people who haven't been to New York would automatically think avenues cross each other when they don't. They run north-south. I don't have a map in front of me, but they run north-south. You know, that sort of thing. But even then, you can open up Google Maps and look and see whether avenues meet.
And in fact, nowadays you can check and look on Google Maps and see the street view and go, oh, look, there's something there. I can reference exactly. that restaurant or whatever.
Yeah, yes. I think research will actually, I think, be a whole other episode because you're right. I mean, with Google and that type of thing, the amount of research people are able to do into their fan fiction now is really crazy. And I've heard crazy stories that I'm sure we'll get on some later podcast from people of having to research ridiculous things and feel very odd about yourself because, especially for the people, I think, who write smut, it's kind of like, never look at my search history at that point. If you're doing the research, right? So there's a whole other avenue of discussion, I think, there around how much research do you or don't you have to do and whether or not it's the beta's responsibility to help with any of that as well, right? Because how much does the beta really, how much can they be expected to add to that if you haven't done the research or not, if it's not their area as well?
Well, I think going on to that, I mean, these days, you know, not even these days, but if you're putting fanfic out there, you're not putting fanfic out for your country. Does that make any sense? You are putting fanfic out that might be written in the US or in Canada, but you've got somebody in Russia who's read it and they really like it and they want to translate it for their non-English speaking Russian friends. Same thing in China. So, you know, you have an international audience. And part of me wants to say, I think you have a bit of an obligation to put out some really good work out there.
And what a beta might catch is they can just question mark things going, this seems odd to me. I don't know. You should check.
Mm-hmm.
And if that, again, is part of your discussion with your beta. What do you want this beta to do? Is it just to see what snags their attention in the wrong way? Is it just to catch the commas because you're addicted to them?
Mm-hmm.
Is it to do them to catch specific things like geography or Brit pick or American pick, which is vital for not throwing people out of the story? And I think that's the main goal, is to have a story that sucks people in so much they can't wait for the next chapter or they can't wait to give you an enthusiastic comment because you took them on such a great trip, which you can't do if a fact smacks you in the face as being completely wrong. It just throws you out of the story and it takes away the joy of the fic.
Okay. So are there other kind of really common challenges you think that a beta reader faces that maybe somebody who's considering being a beta for somebody or who's looking for a beta should consider?
Yes, I think, and it goes back to what we've discussed before, but I think this needs to be reiterated, is you need, if you are going to beta for somebody, especially somebody you don't know, you need to have the conversation about how much criticism can this person deal with? And I am talking about constructive criticism, you know, because some people will like bring on the constructive criticism and then they're like, no, stop it. No. Right. You have to do that because, you know, writing, as we all know, you're putting a bit of yourself out there. Right. And, you know, every time you write a new story or a new article or a new blog post, it is part of you is out there and people can take it very personally. I think one of the best things about writing is the more you write, the more of yourself you put in. But I think also part of it is you also
don't take it as personally because you learn every time you write a new article or a new story. But you need to have that conversation with the writer about what level or what depth of constructive criticism can be given.
What I really enjoyed with betas is they sent me an email with the comments. So I could open it up. I could look at it. I could pout and tell my laptop how wrong they were, how horrible they were, how clearly they didn't understand, and, well, maybe that was a point that I should consider. Uh-huh. But I could have my temper tantrum without the beta hearing it, and then get back to them later and go, yeah, I can understand why you said that. I cut out the first three pages because they weren't going anywhere. And I've had to do that with Fix because when I was writing it, it took me that long to get into the story that was actually the story. And it hurt. But it was right for the story, which is why I think that emailing back and forth rather than having someone like Google Docking and watching them make comments on it live, that would be horrendous.
Oh, God, no, 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 never do that. Oh, my God, no. I can't think of an editing process, and I have been through that. I cannot think of an editing process that could be worse for somebody who is not used to that, especially a relatively new writer.
Yeah, you need space to believe that the beta is wrong until you have time to consider that maybe they were right.
Uh-huh.
So we've talked a lot about constructive criticism, which, again, you know, usually in fandom people will call it concrete. Can we define that, though? So I think that's an also important thing to point out. How do you tell if you're in a relationship with a beta if the criticism you're getting is constructive or not? What's the difference between constructive criticism and criticism that you should be ignoring?
We can start with from the comment point of view and then move on to how it is with a beta.
Okay.
If in the comments they're telling you that you as an individual should never touch a laptop again.
Uh-huh.
If they're saying, why did you put these names in this story? Because these are not the characters you know. And if they are making you feel horrible about yourself, that's not concrete.
Mm-hmm. To add to that, I think... a beta reader who comes back to you and says, well, I found this passage awkward, but can't articulate why it was awkward, that's not constructive criticism. You're like, well, awkward how? Is it the wording? Is it the characters? I mean, when you are doing concrete, you need to be specific. And I'm not just talking about, you know what, you need to put an Oxford comma here because this sentence makes it sound something completely different. Or you know what, I'm not seeing how you can justify the character acting in this way. Perhaps if X, Y, and Z, then yes, I can see it. Or can you kind of really define why the character is acting that way? You need to be very specific with your constructive criticism. Otherwise, it is criticism because you cannot take it and build anything out of it. That's the whole constructive part.
Excellent. Yeah, no, that's a good point. I think people sometimes just think if it's any kind of criticism that's not attacking the person, then it's concrete. But you're right. Mm-hmm. It's you want something that you can then take and walk away from and use. So recently, for example, I asked for a bit of concrete on a story I was working on from someone, not a full beta, but just, can you give me some constructive criticism? And I actually got some really insightful comments around, you know, well, sometimes you summarize a little too much what the person is thinking and you lay it all out too specifically where you don't give your audience enough credit. And they actually linked me with it to a Chuck Palahniuk article where he offers authors suggestions on how to avoid that problem, right?
Yeah.
So I think if it's going to be concrete, it really needs to be put forth in a way that's meant to be helpful to the author.
Exactly. I mean, I find one of the things, and all authors do it, is the tell not show situation, where there's a lot of telling what's going on versus showing what's going on. And I mean, one of the best ways to do that is, you know, don't just say, well, you know, your character is telling people what's going on, where he should be showing or she should be showing what's going on. And then, you know, again, link to a really good example of that. There's a lot of writing tutorials online. Or if you can say, you know, instead of him saying, you know, the day was really, you know, God, today is really hot. Show how the day is really hot without your character saying it's really hot.
No, exactly. So we're going to, I think, wrap it up a little bit. But do you have any final thoughts that you want to offer either kind of new betas listening to this or people considering going and seeking out a beta listening to this?
A good beta author relationship is amazing. A good beta will take the story you had in your head and make sure it actually gets on the paper or will point out where you were going with a story that you didn't realize and make it even better. The saying with writing is that writing is one thing, but rewriting is the hard part. And a beta lets you rewrite, gives you guideposts to rewriting, and can make something amazing which you didn't think you could do. So it's rough. It's rough on both sides. And it is a relationship, and there has to be trust and respect. But when you get into a relationship with a good beta, or a good relationship with a beta, you can be amazed at what happens.
I would say, before you start betaing, talk to the author. You know, and you get on Skype or Google Hangouts if you want to. If not, at least have that email conversation, because there's, you know, don't beta blind. It's not good for you. It's not good for the writer. And understand that there may be some misunderstandings as the two or three of you, depending how many betas, but let's say two of you are working through this first story together. If you build on the trust and you have those ongoing conversations, and the beta understands that it's not their work, it's the writer's work, and the writer understands that the beta is there to really make this work sing, it's just going to get better with time. But have the conversation first.
I definitely agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. So I want to take a moment now to thank all of our listeners and supporters over these last couple of weeks. There are now dozens of you, and you have no idea how happy that makes me. And from all over the world, too. So a big hello to our listeners in Chicago, Illinois, and Haikopudas, Finland, I hope I pronounced that right, and Munich, Germany, and Cognac, France, from here in Toronto, Canada. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. And this week we actually also got our first couple of pieces of good listener feedback that I wanted to share. Klangly56 on SoundCloud wanted to point out that there is a slight correction that needs to be made. When we discussed the Trekkie's Tale, Paula Smith's famous Mary Sue fic in our first episode, J.M. Fry stated that it was written, I believe, sometime in the 90s. It was actually published in 1973 in her fanzine Menagerie. We did correct it on our Tumblr, but for those who missed it, we are aware that we were a little off there. We actually posted a dramatic reading of the fic from YouTube for everyone to enjoy if you're interested, so check that out at otpodcast.tumblr.com. Also, a lovely Anon on Tumblr asked us, what's the best way to start or continue a conversation with one of the points you bring up in the podcast? Now, I'm not sure whether the Anon means me personally, so how do I control the flow of the conversation in the show, or whether they want to know how they can keep the conversation going, so I'll answer both. For me personally, when I'm doing the show, I always try to cover as many aspects of a topic as possible, which sometimes means that I'm not able to go in-depth into a particular aspect of the topic in the way that I'd like. So in the future, one thing that you will see is episodes that delve into things in a more specific way. For example, if you liked our conversation about Mary Sue's in episode 1, we will definitely be continuing that conversation separately at some point on our show, at a later point. Or if you enjoyed hearing us talk about ABO or Rule 63 fix in episode 2, that's another thing that we'll get to at some point in the future. There are always great conversations about fanfiction to be had that could go into insane amounts of detail and get very rambly, and it's hard for me to sometimes keep the show contained and only an hour long, so continuing or starting for me is never really the problem. In terms of how you can continue the conversation yourself, well, we do have a Tumblr, as I mentioned, and it does have a commenting system, so you can post there or you can reblog our posts and support us, and I, the mod, will follow you back. We are also on Twitter, so you can tweet at us there, and we're on Facebook, too. Our Tumblr is dedicated to posting related links on the topics and keeping that conversation going, so I definitely encourage you to join us there, and remember that our contributor bios are also on our blog, so I also encourage you to follow them on Tumblr, AO3, or Twitter if you're interested in hearing more from them as well. And as the community gets bigger around the show, the conversations will be more likely to happen and be more robust, which is what I think you all want. So tell your friends, help spread the word, and you can do that by liking or following us, reblogging or retweeting our content, or linking to us and pointing people in our direction in your own fixed notes if you want. I want the show to really grow, and I want us to be having the kinds of conversations we're having on this show all the time, because I think that's important. So thank you for that feedback, Anon, and I hope that that answered your question. Well, that's our show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks again to Renee and Sunny for their time and their insight. And thanks to Peter Chakowski, otherwise known as webcomic artist Rock Paper Cynic, for the logo and the theme song. And I just want to let everyone know you can buy his amazing book, The HMS Bad Idea, on his website at rockpapercynic.com, and it's also available on Amazon, so please check him out. We are available again on Facebook and Twitter as The OT Podcast, so please follow us or like us there. You can also find us on SoundCloud, TuneIn Radio, and Stitcher Radio, and we're also on the iTunes Store. Now, we actually currently have no reviews on the iTunes Store, so if you'd like to leave us one, we would really appreciate it, and I might even read it out loud on the show, so who wants to be first? Once again, I'm your host and mod Enthusiasm Girl, and thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week with two new contributors and a new topic, and in the meantime, keep writing and reading and squeeing, everybody.